Hey there, welcome back to another week of Radio Melee. It's just me and PB this week as we give our, well, we're going to talk about the fact that we've got a bunch of majors actually coming up for the first time in what feels like forever. PB, I haven't been to a tournament in, well, Genesis, I went to Genesis, but I haven't been to a tournament since then. And, you know, we've got Leffen flying to the United States, probably as we speak. I think he probably might have already touched down. I think there's like Coinbox going on literally right now. And I think
Coinbox right now, we would have had a guest otherwise, maybe several guests. But yeah, that was something that was going on. So if you are wondering about that, yeah, there's only so many days we can do this show. Logistics are a thing. So we're going to be here holding it down today. But we got a lot going on and a lot to talk about.
I would even suggest for our viewers, you know, if you're interested in that sort of thing, you know, you could a website that I like to use, just a pro tip. This is for our live viewers on Twitch. Obviously, if you're watching on YouTube, this doesn't apply to you, but hey, what's up? We appreciate you. But yeah, you could use multitwitch.tv. You could watch us in one channel or one like little window, and then you can like put in, I don't know, J Mook, for example, one of your favorite, or even just Hungrybox. I think that's the main stream because Coinbox is going on right now, and you can have your Radio Melee and eat it too.
Well said.
Have your Melee and eat it too. It wasn't well
beautifully
said.
No, beautifully
actually doesn't
said,
make any
though.
Sense.
I love it. I mean, it's you. Meant to be enjoyed with all senses.
You got Radio Melee coming in your ears. You got Melee coming in your eyes, and you know maybe you're snacking on some potato chips. So that's like taste and smell.
Yeah,
and then you just need touch at that point, don't we all?
Oh, remember the SFAT tweet? This is going to be a good episode.
And then there's the SFAT tweet, right? Rounding the whole thing out, all five senses. Well, and as for the sixth sense, me and PP are going to be giving our predictions. A little segue right there.
I like
for,
that.
For Battle BC5 this weekend, which I am going to. I am in the bracket. I just checked my seeding. I'm apparently not seeded to make top 48, which is very sad, but hopefully I can overperform my seed. That'd be wonderful.
You can do it.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, there's a for people who are kind of out of the loop, we are going to in a little bit go down the seating list and the list of attendees. There's been some controversy, I think, when it comes to controversy is always a funny word. I'm you know, clickbait, but yeah, there's been some controversy with regard to the Battle BC seating, right? Would you say, PP, is that a fair take?
Well, controversy, I think it's mostly, oh my gosh, Mango's 10th seed, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, oh my gosh.
But Zane's, what is Zane? Zane's like
third. I haven't really heard anyone talking about that, but it is surprising, right? I don't think three is a number when we think of Zane. I don't think three is the number we think of. I think we usually think of a number around one, maybe two at worst. So it is a little surprising for Zane to be there. I'm sure he feels a lot of thing about it, but you know what? I mean, if you think about it, three is just one more than the number of ice climbers, so maybe this is a good omen for him.
Wow. And you can really relate everything in the world to the number of ice climbers that are out there. Hey, I want to remind our, I want to remind people tuning in, if you're listening on YouTube, well, maybe this doesn't apply to you insofar as you're listening on YouTube, but if you're, you know, on a future Tuesday, maybe you remember to come by the stream of me or PP at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern when we do this. And you can, you know, be one of the people, you know, if you've ever listened to an episode and you know that you can easily talk to us live on air just by using !! Radio Melee in the chat, hop in the Discord and ask us whatever you want. And it can really be about whatever you want. We get a little bit silly sometimes.
Yes.
So it can be on topic, off topic.
Especially today, right? Where we have things we want to talk about. We're going to go over plenty of things, but if you've had a topic that you're like, well, it doesn't work maybe so well for a certain guest, but you just want to get the question out there. You want people to wrangle with it. I think today's your day.
Yeah. I think today we'll take, you know, basically literally anything, right? I mean, most weeks there's like some semblance of like, okay, this is what we kind of want to talk about because this guest, is on for some topical reason. And this week there's none of that. So you can literally ask us anything you want and we'll probably get to you. Okay. Well, that being said, let's look at some of these. We've already pulled it up on the program here. So this is the list of seeds. I think another interesting one was Moki over Amsa, which
for our audio listeners, do you think it would be good to go over like the first 10 seeds?
Yeah. Let's talk about them. And we can even go, I mean, we can. Yeah. So I'm just going to read them in order. J Mook, who's the first seed, then Cody. Zane, Moki is fourth, Omps is fifth, Hungrybox is sixth, then Leffen, and rounding out top eight is Apps. And then ninth and tenth, respectively, are Aklo and Mango. So Mango here under Aklo and Axe, the Cedars hitting him hard for the Genesis underperformance, but of course Mango was playing Dr. Mario. You've got Kadoran under that, Soonsei, S2J, Zuppi, Joshman, Triff, Toussaint. Triff is interesting, so we've got more Europeans than I even realized. Joshman is also interesting. I think this marks the start of Joshman's kind of return to American tournaments. I think Joshman might be. I think I've heard that he's maybe procured a visa or something. Might be settling down for a little while in Canada. I don't know if that's starting now, but okay. So Joshman's here and is seated 15th. 16th is Triff. 17th Toussaint, and then we've got Shroomed, Spark, Nun, Ingen, which is really interesting. Ingen's first open bracket tournament, I believe, in the United States, unless
Ingen
you count.
Ingen is the Japanese Marth.
Japanese Marth. Many people who's been playing for like a year and a half. Yeah. Has really not been playing Melee for very long. I think Ingen's only other American tournaments have been, Ingen was at the, what tournament was that? Was that the, there was a great, where he took a game off of Mango. That was at, Scuff World Tour? Yeah.
Oh,
so
okay.
Scuff World Tour, but that wasn't really open bracket, you know, right, given that was at the GG studio. We couldn't just have a million people in there.
Right.
And Ingen also competed at Smash World Tour the previous year. However, the reason I say that wasn't really an open bracket event for Ingen is because Ingen kind of auto-qualified to the round robin stage. Ingen didn't, there were two ways to kind of make it into the top whatever cut of the bracket, and one was the round robin where you qualify through points, and the other was the last chance qualifier. So Ingen didn't really play in an open bracket. This is actually going to be Ingen's first open bracket tournament, just conventional double elimination tournament in the United States, or not the United States, North America, since it is Canada. So that'll be that'll be cool. 22nd seed is Nut, followed by Lowercase Hero, and then Bonfire 10, rounding out the top 24 seeds. So, to those of you who are wondering where to find the Submit Topics Here channel, I see people asking about it in chat. You're going to want to react to. It's a two-step process. You need to go to README and click on, you know, like we'll basically react. just react to get, you know, speaking privileges. And then if you go into assign roles, you can click on the number 3 for SSBM players. And once you do that, you'll be able to see all of the, all of the Melee channels, and you
which
can just hop
submit
in.
Submit topics here.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, you just gotta, you know, do the whole, I just joined a server. Let me prove to you guys that I'm not a bot. You got to do that whole song and dance. But beyond that, so I think the biggest, like you said, I think the biggest point of controversy is definitely Mango at 10th. I'm kind of curious how you feel about that. I would say before I let you speak on that, sure. I don't know. Cody over Zane and Moki over Omps are interesting, but I always feel like, you know, there's kind of this thing with seeding where 2 and 3 swapping doesn't matter too much, and 4 and 5 seeding don't matter too much because you kind of just end up playing each other anyway. Sometimes it kind of matters in terms of who your opponent is the round before that.
Sure.
But in this case, you know, it's like not too different because Omps and Moki are going to probably fight in winners' quarters or whatever it is anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think, you know, it's always tricky to think about seeding as a player, because the more you're thinking about that, the less you're like preparing and you're focusing on whoever you got to play regardless, right? So I think as a player, I think it's always kind of tricky how much you want to think about that. And I think, you know, especially compared to the past, I think we do, you know, a much better job with seeding. I think having dedicated people working on that is really nice, even if sometimes things do go a little strange or we're not sure, we scratch our heads. But yeah, like you were saying, I think Mango is the one that people are primarily talking about, and how much I think, you know, what I was reading some discussion about this on Reddit, which is where we have this lovely post from, with only nice comments under it, I'm sure. What people were saying was, Mango was you know, effectively, you know, 1 and 2 effectively tied for first last at the end of last year, a few months ago. And then there was one tournament, and then there haven't been so many since, and he didn't do as well at that one. And so why is he getting penalized so much? And so I don't really, you know, it's seeding, I think, is always going to have some element of, well, you do you not penalize him for it? Does he just get away with playing Doc for free? Like, that's like, what if so, if Leffen did it, would that be okay? You know, like, there are questions, and I don't know, and I'm not telling you guys how to feel about it. I'm just telling you, you know, these are other things we would have to consider. And then there is, and then, you know, I think there haven't been so many other tournaments, but with that being the only data point, and then maybe I think there, like, I guess he could have gone to Collision if he really wanted to make up for that before this, and he didn't. I mean, he was still taking a break, but regardless, right, for people thinking about the attendance aspect of it, then there had he hadn't been to as much as I think at least most of these other players, I believe. I think every maybe not Leffen.
Yeah. Well, I think Mango's been on a pretty much a hiatus since then. Right. I do feel like, I mean, I will say, I do feel like there's somewhat of a, I don't know. I don't know if this is like a conscious thing or whatever, but I do feel like Leffen somewhat gets a pass, and I think very reasonably so, for just having to travel way further than everybody else, you know?
Sure.
But yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, also, I think the Twitter man's scary. But
Twitter man is scary. Yeah.
But yeah, no, but seriously, I do think it's just harder with when you're from Europe, like, especially, I mean, this is something we talked about before too, right? With unsponsored players from Europe, or even like players that are pretty good, but maybe they don't have the highest tier sponsor in there in Europe. And it's like still just really hard to, because the flight and everything is just so much more expensive and everything.
Yeah.
So it's harder for sponsors to cover that. And so, I think it is fair to consider that. And so that's why it's really nice that he's here. And because, you know, he's been. I can work out well for everyone. And I'm kind of curious, you know, based on these projected matchups, if there's anyone that you really want to see Leffen play. I mean, we have, I think, one of the more interesting stories going into this, actually. A lot of people, from what I've seen, some people are excited about this. Some people are disgusted by it. So I'm curious what your take is. But Zane's Ice Climbers for Sheik on not every stage, but for Final Destination in Pokemon Stadium. I think, you know, that's there with Leffen and J-Mook being here. I think there's a pretty good chance. And then, you know, I think Spark's also here and other people. It's curious what we'll see that happening more. How much we'll see as ice season. So I'm curious what, like, if you think that's one of the more interesting stories going in, or maybe it's like Mango's like possible redemption arc, like, what do you feel is most important coming here?
Yeah, I'm really curious about that. I think for Zane, so like, yeah, Zane Icy's, I think, would be a story if it happens, but I don't really, you know, not having really, I know he's practicing that counterpick plan. So for people who aren't aware, basically Zane is toying with the idea of potentially busting out Sheik, Ice Climbers for Sheik, right? Mm-hmm. But I think it's really only Sheik. But I think it's a very reasonable counterpick because Sheik is kind of one of the thorns in Zane's side lately, especially with the fact that both J-Mook and Leffen are going to be at this tournament. But, you know, I don't know. Like, that being said, like, I think the way it's going to go, if at all, is that maybe Zane tries it one game, but if the Icy's loses, I feel like he probably just goes back to Marth. Like, I don't know if he's going to full-on commit this turn. I just don't get that vibe that... one second. I just got to... I just don't get the vibe that I feel like he is... I don't know, because it's weird, right? Like, I feel like you want to have tournament experience when you test out a counterpick like that, and I feel like if you're going for, you know, this kind of somewhat, I would say, untested counterpick in terms of tournament, you know, are you really going to bring that out? Like, I'm looking at Zane's bracket path, right? And, like, Zane's got, after getting into top 48, Zane's got Zuppi followed by... S2J followed by Hungrybox. And so, like, potentially Zane runs up against a Sheik in, like, winner's finals. Like, it's, like, literally already J-Mook and it's winner's finals. So it's, like, is that where you start doing your experimentation in tournament? Like, that, to me, feels really scary. But, you know, I mean, depending on how how the bracket run goes and how Zane's feeling it might happen. And I do think if it happens, it could be very, very interesting. But it really does depend if Zane feels like that counterpick is actually like ready. I do also think it is probably going to end up, I think I remember Zane saying something like this on a stream. I think it's going to at least start as like a stage specific counterpick strategy.
Right.
And I think in that case, it's a lot easier to justify. So yeah, I mean, I do think if that happens, it's very interesting. But I mean, Zane's got to get through Cody first, right? Like winner semis, if mm-hmm. everything goes according to projection, it's going to be literally Zane versus Cody. So I don't know. It might not even be a thing. I hope it happens though. It's definitely very exciting. I think it's cool. Like it was the same thing. I was very, very interested when Leffen was talking about the whole Sheik counterpick strategy against Marth's.
Right.
And I think that those were some really fire sets when Leffen was first going Sheik against Zane. I mean, the last battle of BC, by the way, last year was Leffen winning it over Zane in Sheik Marth. So I always think that when top players commit to these sorts of counterpicks, I think they're very interesting. So I think if it happens, it's definitely going to be one of the things we're talking about come next week.
Sure. And are there any other story? I mean, I think, you know, you remember all of this stuff so much better than I do. So I'm just going to ask you straight up, is there any other story that you're looking at here that you think maybe people aren't paying enough attention to? Is there a player that you think is really going to pop off? Do you think Soonsay is like a lock for top eight, for example? Like, is there anything that you're looking at this and you're saying, oh, well, I haven't seen this matchup in a while, or there's something that's like really interesting to you?
I am really interested to see I think there's two foxes that I'm very interested in seeing how they perform, and one is Soonsay, who is projected to actually be Fox doing Moki. This isn't the first round of top 48 winners. I was looking at that match as being potentially really interesting. I think the winner of that match, that whole section of the bracket is really interesting because if Opsa beats Kadoran, which is the projected result, it'll be either Moki or Soonsay versus Opsa. And I actually think those are two of the foxes by far the best against Opsa. So that's
a great test for Opsa.
It's a great test for Opsa for sure. Yeah, he's got to be ready for that. Another Fox player that I'm really interested in watching just happens to be Fox player. There's nothing special about Fox, but Joshman. I actually think Joshman, so it's going to be Joshman J-Mook. I remember the last time they played, I think it was at Gommel last year, and that was a ridiculous set that really went the distance, although J-Mook kind of styled on Joshman game five. But like, you know, that's definitely a matchup where it can always happen. And
Mango here.
What's that?
We have Leffen Mango down here.
Leffen Mango happening earlier than... Yeah, and I guess that's the real thing about 10th seed, right? Is you talk about the number 10, and it's like, well, what does it really mean to be 10th seed instead of 8th seed, right? It's just two seeding spots. But, you know, Mango Leffen is happening two rounds outside of top 8 instead of one round outside or even in top 8, right?
Yeah.
Which probably Leffen's not that happy about either, right? Like, Leffen probably would really rather... I don't know. Like, who's seated even like below? I don't know. Who's like 11th seed? Is that like
Kadoran's 11?
Kadoran's 11th seed, right? So it's like, you know, it's kind of funny where, you know, Leffen in having to fight the 10th seed instead of the 9th seed or the 11th seed just so happens to be going up against Mango in like a really early round, which is potentially a bummer for like Leffen or Mango, but also very exciting for the rest of us. So, I don't know. I heard Mango talking that good shit on his stream about how he's really excited to play Leffen and how he was like, he said something like, I'm never losing to Leffen again. Something to that effect, basically.
Someone was saying, now I don't know if this is true, but they were saying, I think Mango has gotten the better of Leffen in the past six sets or several sets or something like that. I think some of them, I don't know how close they've been, but I think, you know, the result going Mango's way, I think is very important.
Yeah, well, I do feel like it's not even just Leffen. It's also like just Fox in general, right? Like the whole thing everyone was saying was like, oh, now that Mango's not really entering as much, that's really good for Cody. Because it felt like Cody was beating everybody, including Zane, but like I think the last like three or four times, maybe not four, but at least the last two or three times, I think Mango's kind of had Cody's number. I'm remembering like Smash Summit 14 was was is that the one where Smash Summit 14 Mango won pretty cleanly, just kind of beat the brakes off everybody that tournament, and it ended with a pretty convincing, I would say, 3-0 over Cody at the time, IBDW. So yeah, I don't know. I think for Mango, like, getting a Fox, like, even if it is Leffen, on one hand, that sucks that he's 10th seed, but on the other hand, it's kind of funny that Mango's bracket path to top eight potentially is Leffen into Cody, right? Because, like, that could easily just be, if Mango's playing hot with Falco, with the way those sets have been going, that could actually just be Mango kind of cruising into top eight, which would be kind of, I'm not going to say, like, poetic, but, you know, it would certainly be, I think the nation would be, you know, waving the flag for that winner's run. So
absolutely. I'm sure they're already preemptively waving, but you know, I think having it happen,
they're pre-gaming. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's it might not be it might not shake out the way people think. You know, where I think that the community sometimes can be a little bit, what's the word? Like, you know, you've got that short-term memory, right? Like, where you don't really remember more than past the last tournament or whatever. You know, I see people on YouTube comments and Reddit or whatever saying, like, oh, Mango's washed. Like, of course Mango's 10th seed and all this stuff. But it's like, yeah, but he, like, you know, went all Dr. Mario Genesis, took an extended break, and basically came on the reads and was talking about how he was super happy to be playing Melee again, and he felt like the break was exactly what he needed. And, you know, for the people who've been tuning, you know, I'll tune into stream every now and then, and he's kind of been talking about how, like, you know, he's having a lot of fun with Melee again, and
love that,
just really enjoying the game, and feels like he's playing pretty well, and it's kind of been, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that, like, that kind of Mango, who simultaneously is enjoying Melee but also feels like he's got something to prove, I think that's, like, the scariest version of Mango. I think Mango is at his weakest when he feels like he's kind of proved himself and, like, doesn't have anything to prove, you know, and is kind of resting on his laurels. I feel like sometimes that's when Mango tends to slip a little bit. But I think this is kind of the perfect storm for Mango to potentially have a really hot tournament run. So,
yeah.
Because, you know what I mean? It feels like with Mango, it kind of comes as, like, a sine wave.
Right.
And I feel like this is exactly, like, all of the indicators are pointing towards, you know, potentially Mango played really, really well. So that's kind of like my, maybe not even that hot take, but I think this might be, like, a really, really good tournament for Mango, but we'll see. I mean, the field is so stacked coming into this, like, literally every good player is here, except I guess Plup is the only person.
Yeah, I think
really out of, like, the top, whatever, 10 or whatever.
And I,
what do you think about? Sure. Go ahead. Then I got another question for you.
Sure. I just wanted to really point out a couple things really quickly. One, Moki at number four. Whether it's unjustified or not, I don't really care. I don't know.
I can talk about that one.
I'm not one of those people, but I can tell you.
I'm going to justify it for you.
But we had Moki on because he'd been doing so well. He's been improving a lot, and he's been talking about how his mindset's been changing a whole lot. And I've been, you know, watching him on his stream when he's been playing a lot of these people that I think were giving him more trouble before, and he's been able to do a lot better.
Yeah.
And so I think Moki is starting to really push so much more, even through the eye test, into really earning that seed. And I think, you know, Moki is someone who's a lot of a fan favorite. So I think this is good for the game, and I think this is something exciting. He's on home turf. I don't know how much that helps him particularly. I don't know his stats, but I think that's really cool, and I wanted to talk about that. And then JMook being number one seed, I think, is the first time this has happened. Yeah. I was just in JMook's stream a little bit prior to this, and JMook was talking about how after winning Genesis, like, he had felt difficulties handling the lows of winning an event, which he didn't expect, and there were a lot of things that surprised him about it, and he was sorting a lot of things out with himself, and I mean, I can relate to that. So I found his conversation.
Me too. I've won lots of tournaments.
You and JMook, you know,
right? They, the big
many
the
many
big
talk
three.
About us together.
Many talk about us, yes, in the same breath. Yes, correct.
But
no, it's true, right? It's like this. Yes. It's kind of the same thing I was saying with Mango, where, like, you know, I think for a lot of people, it's very natural to feel the most motivated when you feel like you've got upside, when you've got something to, you know, you want to go up, you want to punch above your weight class, right? You want to make some waves. But, you know, if you're the peak, then all you can really do is hold your ground. And, you know, that's a little bit less motivating for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, you have to change how you approach it. And I think J-Mook is still in the process of sorting that out. But he was still in the process of sorting it out in Collision, and he did great. So I will see, I say that because he had, like, I don't know, he might still be streaming at the time of this recording, I'm not sure, but he was talking for a while about all this stuff he'd been experiencing. So if there are surprises, that's interesting. But if he does well, then I think keeping that in mind might be really interesting for our listeners. So I wanted to point out those two things really quickly, Tove.
Hard agree. Yeah, hard agree. I think that, like, with somebody like with J-Mook, you know, it can I'm really interested, and I think a very telling set is going to be him versus Axe coming into the top eight. I do think that for J-Mook's, I think he's got, like, just strictly speaking, taking it out of the realm of the mental and taking it strictly to the practical of who he actually has to fight. I think that he's got something going for him this tournament, which is that Hungrybox does seem to be on the other side. Hungrybox is nowhere to be found. Hungrybox is on the other side of the bracket. J-Mook, if he gets into grands through winners, then basically the only way J-Mook Hungrybox happens is if Hungrybox makes it into grands through losers.
He clutches up
exactly, like it's or if they meet in winners finals or something. That's like the only way they end up playing. Yeah. However, to get into winners finals, J-Mook potentially has to go through both Axe and AMSA. And, you know, the big thing at about this time last year, it's been a little bit pronounced lately, but J-Mook has been a little bit
unfamiliar
with, I would say, the floatier matchups. And in particular, it's funny because we talk about, okay, obviously Puff is a floaty, but, like, talking about Pikachu and Yoshi, you know, these are matchups that I think Sheik wins, and that I think for, you know, basically since the dawn of Melee, people have thought that Sheik wins. But, you know, it's kind of felt like, to a certain degree, they haven't always been matchups that play to J-Mook's strengths as a player. But I do think that, you know, I've kind of personally called it to where my kind of perception of J-Mook is that I feel like as time goes on, he's going to start figuring out these matchups more and more. He just hasn't had to think about it so much yet, but I think now he kind of knows what the matchups he needs to work on. Yeah, so what are your thoughts there? J-Mook Axe outside of Winner's Top 8, and then potentially J-Mook AMSA in Top 8. Yeah, what do you think?
That's interesting. Axe is in a really strange spot right now. I mean, coming off, I know he had a loss to Salt, and I think Salt had a fantastic performance last weekend, but I think her win over Axe, I think, was also relatively decisive, which I thought was surprising. Mm-hmm. And how much of that, because I think Salt's been improving, but is there any of that that's, how much of that is Axe also, I think, is an interesting question. So I think this is really important. If Axe is able to get this win on J-Mook and cause a roadblock, I think this instills a lot more confidence in him. It's a really big thing. And I think Sheik is just a challenging matchup for Pikachu. So I think it's a really important thing for Axe as well. I think this is an important tournament for Axe as well.
Agreed.
AMSA, I feel like that dude pretty much always brings the heat. I think the only thing for him lately is he's had a little bit of controller issues. Hopefully that's resolved. I know he's had a lot going on lately. As of recording this video, he got married today. So that was amazing. So I clearly he's had some priorities that are not controllers, and I love that for him. But, you know, how prepared he might be going into this tournament, I don't know. Like how that could be impacted. And that's not to say, you know, whatever, right? Like, yeah, life happens, but that's a curiosity going in there. But I think he'll usually generally bring the heat.
Happen. I mean, I think AMSA might literally be flying back to Canada, like, right now. Or just did, or something. Like, I think that that's basically happening literally right now for Battle of BC. And also, you know, I think he was basically just spending some time in Japan, but is going back home to Canada. So I don't know. I think for AMSA, like, AMSA's not the kind of person who, you know, I feel like some people, when they have, you know, like a matchup issue or controller issues or something, like, how do I put this? I think AMSA is extremely proactive about solving those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And he won't usually let external roadblocks really get in his way for very long. You know, I feel like he's somebody who, like, event to event, like on a really quick time frame, usually kind of, it feels like, kind of breaks through whatever's kind of been in his way, right? We've seen this for a lot recently, where, you know, someone will beat Amsa one tournament and then Amsa looks like he's got a whole new lease on life on the matchup or whatever at the very next event. So yeah, I'm curious how that shakes out. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've gone over so much of this. I think the tournament's covered pretty well. Come back to this video next week, see how we did. Maybe we can even do a little retrospective, see how things shaped out. But fun little breakdown. I'm willing to go over to the community voice if you are, sir.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's check it out. So we basically had, you know, I think we had Zamuan last week talking about basically how you relate to the community, you know, the reasons, the motivations that people get into Super Smash Brothers Melee and how they perceive their own connection to the game and to the community. So we've got Andrew Kenny, who we've definitely, I think.
Yeah, I was recognizing that name too.
Yeah, we've definitely had Andrew Kenny on before. Started going in turns because I wanted to play against actual humans and see what that was like. I wasn't necessarily interested in getting better. Just getting an idea of where I stood right then and there, which was sometime between 2008 and 2010. Same for me, actually. I keep going to tournaments because I love Melee, and what better way to show that love than by attending events and adding to the pool of competitors?
Heck yeah.
Emissarius Smeagol says, if I was going to a tournament, it would pretty much be to pitch in some dollars to the scene. I recognize that I'm garbage at playing the game, so winning isn't an appropriate goal for me. I really am a spectator at heart within the community, which, I mean, we need spectators.
And I think, you know, we have a lot of those in Melee, and so I'm... You know, if you're someone that loves the storylines and loves the seating discussions and loves all that, I mean, please stick around. We're glad you're here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fully agree. I mean, we need no scene is complete without some fans.
Right. Absolutely. So, I mean, super happy to have the fans and everyone that's trying to contribute in their own way. You don't have to be a top player to do it. Everyone's welcome. But we have, as our final answer here, we've got Penguino Bino saying, I started going to Melee tournaments last year because I had watched tournaments for a long time after getting pipelined in from Chillin' Dude Sunshine's speedruns in 2015. Holy moly. Yes, the Sunshine.
The reverse pipeline. We knew about the Melee to Sunshine pipeline. We didn't know about the Sunshine to Melee pipeline.
The speedrunning Melee connection continues, or at least it was strong. It was stronger then, but maybe there's a little bit of it now, and I love that for us. They had burned out of all the other games they played at the time. I didn't know that many people on campus because most of my classes were remote because of COVID, and I decided I need to go out more. So I went and met a lot of great people last spring at TSI. Love Champagne Scene, especially Storm, who, if not for him, I probably would have not continued going to them after the first one. If that sounds confusing, that last part looked like it was a run-on sentence, but I appreciate the shout-out to all of
those things. We love run-on sentences around here. Yeah, we're not English teachers around these parts.
True. I just for the audio listeners,
it's a little bit confusing.
That may have been confusing.
Well, it looks like Penguino is from Champagne, which is where I think Zamu's from. So maybe we got a friend of Zamu's showing some support in the comments, which is cool.
And I like that so many people were saying, yeah, I wanted to go out and make friends. I wanted to go out to support the scene. I wanted to go out just to see what it was like and experience like the stuff I've only seen as like a spectator. I think all of that's great. I think we're so used to maybe how it was when we started, where it was like, you know, I want to grind, or, you know, like I saw the sick thing like on the internet, because the internet was so much smaller back then. And I kind of like that we have so many more reasons to join now.
No, totally. I think that, you know, the Zamu is kind of expressing this viewpoint where, you know, kind of in an ideal world or whatever, everyone wants to be the best, right? It's like the most, I think back in our day, it probably was one of the most common reasons to get into Smash. But I think these days it's probably not.
Which is great. I'm okay with that.
No, I think it's literally better. I mean, just from the point of view of, only one person can really be the best. So from a logistical perspective, I think it makes more sense if more people have other motivations, right? I don't know. This is all to say that I love having fans who just spectate or just, you know,
tune in to Melee every week. If you love Melee and you want to come on to Radio Melee and tell us how much you love it and ask us who would Elijah Wood main, feel free. Speaking of that, let's go ahead and get in our first caller. I'm curious about the questions we have for today. We've got Pijoncho coming back after a little bit of a
Pijoncho.
Hello, welcome back to the program. Where are you calling in from, and what's your question for us today?
Hello, it's great to be back. I'm calling in from New Jersey, as per usual.
Love New Jersey. Just kidding.
Not many people do. Okay, well.
Sorry. It's a bit at this point with me.
No, it's fine. I get it. It's fine.
You guys have those sandwiches. You guys have those sandwiches, and no one can take that away from you.
Low-key, I don't even know what you're talking about.
there's just, anyway, whatever. But yeah, sorry. Okay. I'm cutting you off. What's your question?
Okay, so recently I don't know if you guys saw, there was an Action Esports video detailing mm-hmm. history of Melee stage list. So I watched the video. Oh,
that's why all those questions on Reddit about stage lists were going on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe. In hearing about the various reasons why different stages were banned, I was mm-hmm. wondering what your thoughts on stage gimmicks and hazards were. Do you think they are categorically anti-competitive, or do they have potential to add competitive nuance? If you think they do, what does that mean for stages like Brinstar, for example?
Why don't you go first, BB?
Oh, man, yeah. Back in my day, I actually played on those stages, so I can tell you about it. But also back in my day, we didn't optimize things and lab things as much or nearly to the same degree. So who knows what some of these stages would be like if we had modern players and little Discord communities looking at all the interactions. So that's the first thing. But I do think, just as an idea, I don't think that there were discussions about this all the time. And so I have my own viewpoint on this, and which is, I think playing the stage is not inherently bad. If learning mm-hmm. these stage specific mechanics, like there are background indicators that tell you when the lava rises on Brinstar. It's not like, mm-hmm. oh, suddenly lava's here. Like you know it's coming, you have time, even if there's something going on, and you can adjust your combo accordingly. You can change how you play neutral accordingly. Like, there are things that you can do it. But there was a group of people that didn't like playing the stage, and they just wanted to play the player, and that was its own thing. Mm-hmm. But if we think of, but even we don't fully get away from this, in my opinion, because even being able to figure out how we want to position, we think about the position of the battlefield platforms in relation to each other, or the Dreamline mm-hmm. platforms and how those are different. I think we still have to play the stage to an extent. So I think the skill set is still something that's part of our community, and extending that train of thought to some of these stages is still interesting, if only to understand what we would maybe like to do with modded stages one day, or just to understand, you know, what we value in competition more. Because I think that's all important. It's an important discussion. So these stages, there are some, like, it's hard to talk about this in a vacuum, because like the stages mm-hmm. are there, right? Like if there were less cars that showed up on Mute City, it would probably be a little easier to manage than if there were like the 500 that came through, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's you can talk about it theoretically, you can talk about what's actually there. So in a sense, like, all those cars being there means like the floor is lava for a little bit. And then that's kind of an issue, at least to some people. But if there were cars that were easier to avoid, like maybe they were slower, then maybe it would be a little better competitively. And like, mm-hmm. so we can talk about aspects of the question, and you can kind of reiterate how you feel about it, but I'll pass this over to Toph and see, he can cover anything that I didn't cover, and we can see where we go from there.
Yeah, I kind of wish, in a sense, that we talked about it a bit last week. You know, Zan was talking about greens a lot, and also about how Zan was a big fan of the off-season format. I think it would be cool to see, because the thing about it is that I always got the sense, even back in the day, that I got the sense that people didn't really push those stages that hard. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, people would like, okay, I think if we played on, like, let's say, this stage isn't even really a stage that was tournament legal for very long, but like, let's say Jungle Japes, right? Like, I think if we played on that stage now, people would literally, if top players actually practice hardcore on that stage for like a few weeks, like, everyone would start using the river to like recover. People would like side B under the like platforms to like get back to center stage or whatever. People would learn the claptrap timings, you know, like, people were pretty lackadaisical, I think, about a lot of those stages back in the day. Not to say that we didn't all have knowledge of certain basic things. Like, I think everyone kind of knew, for example, the Mute City car cadence. Like, you know that the first time around the map, the cars kind of come at that area where it's really wide and there's a lot of platforms. Then the second time through, they they don't really come at that timing. And there's that one part where the cars are kind of coming from above and you got to be careful. And everyone back in the day did kind of know that to that level. They knew certain things about like the predictable elements on these maps. But I think that I think there are a lot of stages that I just think it would be cool, because I think that if you actually took modern top players and like made them play on these stages to a certain degree, I think people would get, they'd show you crazy shit that you've never seen before. But at the same time, I get why they don't want to do that. Because, you know, there are element like Zamu was talking about, the melee community just kind of does tend to think that random elements or whatever are kind of inherently anti-competitive. I think that's just something that are seen, you know, we're a fighting game. If you wanted more variants, you'd probably go play card games or something, right? So I get why it'll probably never happen. I've always kind of had a, you know, I've always had like a dream of, and maybe I can run this as an online event or something at some point, but I've always kind of had a dream of doing a tournament where I've always thought a cool format was basically making it so stages like this could be on the table, but that the players always have enough bans to make it so that if they really don't want to play on these stages, they don't have to. So like, I don't know. I always thought there might be room for some kind of rule set where, let's say, you know, you've got a couple weird counterpick stages in there. Maybe you've got Rainbow Cruise or what have you, but maybe each player gets two bans. And so therefore they can ban, maybe you're a Marth player and you don't want to fight Fox on Rainbow Cruise or Kronir or whatever, so you ban that, but then you also have a ban left over to spend on your Dreamland or whatever. But then maybe for certain combinations of players, they might actually decide that they don't want to use their ban on the weird stage and they actually are down to fight there. So you could see those, like, you know, I think some kind of rule set could be, that could be cool, because then the players who really don't want to play on those stages can avoid them, whereas you have the possibility of them coming up and then maybe it's really exciting when it happens or something. And maybe that happens once or twice an event, but not for, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Again, I always point out how Omsa won off season without playing on, I don't think Omsa played on Mute City even once in the bracket.
Right.
So I think rule sets where, like, I think we don't necessarily, my personal opinion is, I think it would be fine if you just let people ban them, but have them on the potential stage list. And, you know, functionally speaking, it should be all right. But I get why people don't want to deal with it. It doesn't feel like, it just feels like we haven't looked at even expanding the stage list in like the better part of a decade. And so I don't really think it's going to happen at this point, but I do think there's room for it. If there was an experimental TO who wanted to mess with it, I don't think it's I don't think it's inherently anti-competitive.
Okay.
That's
awesome. I guess. Okay. Yeah. That, yeah. I would actually more or less agree with that. So I guess expanding on it.
Yeah.
Say like a future where people magically become more open to like either like taking on stages that have hazards or gimmicks in them, or like, or like creating modded stages with hazards or gimmicks in them for some reason. Do you think there's like valid reasons to like implement hazards or gimmicks in such a way that like kind of like promote the certain types of gameplay that like players want? Like, I don't know.
Yes. Wait, I have opinions on this. Okay. Here's how I think you should do it. And this is functionally, this is for all the TO. Say if you're a TO out there that runs an online series or something, but you have no idea where to start with running your crazy modified rule set, this is what I recommend. Because this is what we actually did back in the day, PP, if you remember. I don't know if this was ever like formally decided on by TOs, but functionally speaking, what we kind of always, I remember basically there was always, on a very macro sense, in terms of the weird stages, there were basically two types of stages. Stages that were good for spaces or fast fallers, and stages that were good for floaties. And I feel like if you were going to do this kind of rule set, I think the way to do it is to balance out, you want to think about balancing out in terms of the fast fallers and the floaties. Like, you don't want to have like, oh, I'm running a tournament with all the vanilla stages, but also Brinstar and Mute City. Cause like those stages are like really, really good for Peach and Puff. And like, you also don't want to do like, oh, I'm running all the vanilla stages plus Corneria and Rainbow Cruise. Like, cause those stages are like really good for disgustingly good for spaces. And So I think that the way to do it, if you were a TO who was running a local or an online tournament, you wanted to experiment with the stage list, I think the first place to start is understanding which stages are good for which characters, and going from there. And basically, you don't want to skew it too hard in one direction. You want to think about possible matchups, like say a Marth player and a Peach player play in tournament. Okay, what does their actual ban process end up looking like? That's how I would do it. Because otherwise, if you just add two or three stages that you think are really cool, I think you can end up in situations where the thing I suggested, where like you know it's still balanced because the players can ban the stages that they don't want to play on. That can't happen anymore. Like if I'm playing Fox versus Puff or something, and like the stage list is like Brinstar Mute City or whatever, and I have like two bans, then you know maybe I have to ban Brinstar and Dreamland or something, but then I'll have to play on Mute City anyway. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think the way you do it is you balance it with regards to matchups.
Okay.
I would take this slightly differently and answer the other part of your question. Because I was listening to Toph talk about it, and I was like, okay, well, what about if we modded the stages part? Like, are there other ways to use hazards that might be good, that we might like? And I think, you know, the first thing I thought was, well, everyone wants Smashville, and that is kind of a hazard or a gimmick. The platform is moving, after all. We don't have, I mean, constantly moving platforms. We have the Fountain of Dreams ones that kind of move sometimes, but they stop. And so we have the Smashville one that's always moving, and that's something that people already want. So It doesn't have to be Claptrap falling from the sky. It can be like a lot of people hate ledge camping. So yeah. Mm-hmm. What we could do is you could have a stage where it functions normally, or maybe it has a couple other things. But if you grab the ledge three times, one of those little bumpers gets added by the ledge, and maybe it's random. And then if you get it, every time you let go, another bumper gets added. So maybe you get it, you can try and plank, but eventually you're just going to think and you're going to fly away, and it'll be very funny. And obviously, if it's maybe that we can recognize if it's Puff and we put it in the air too or something, it'd be funny.
Yeah.
So
that's a cool idea.
And so I was thinking about that, or I was thinking about like the same idea. Like you could have like, you know, the sudden death, like bombs falling if you have someone sitting on a top platform for too long, because that invalidates like a lot of like low mid tiers, low tiers, or just makes life a lot harder for them. And so you could have that, like that might be kind of extreme. You could just do bumpers there too, or you have like a green shell that spawns in from like a weird angle. Like it does, like you can do, you know, stuff that like that, or you could even have like kind of funny, the longer you stand up there, the more the platform turns. So eventually you just kind of slide off.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. So there are things that you could do that aren't necessarily like drastic, like lava coming up out of the ground, that are a gimmick that you learn how to play on the stage, like, and how, like, maybe you tactically stand on the platform for a little bit, so like it can set up for a certain combo for you, or it sets up like a certain wavelength where you slide up and you can like you can combo farther with Falco or something. Like
nice sound effect.
Thank you.
Of course.
Yeah, in my head, it sounded much cooler even.
No, but, it sounded really cool.
It was pretty solid.
So I think there are things where there are simple, understated things that I think people would be more in line with.
Yeah.
That you can use randomness in a way that isn't as overstated, that I think competitive players could still like. And I think that sort of idea, I think people could get more on board with. And I think if we were going to mod stages, which I'm not necessarily recommending because we have no governing body, and what the heck are we going to have? We wait for hacks and or UCF team to push something through. Like it just sounds like a mess. But if we were going to do it, I think that would be some of the ways to consider it.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it kind of reminds me of like PM stages. Like if you've seen a lot of like the PM neutral stages or even counter pick stages, they've got, I don't know. There's like that Green Hill Zone stage where there's like,
the platform swings.
Yeah. There's that one swing platform, and it's like, you know, that's a very balanced stage. It's just unique. And it would, I've always thought it'd be cool. I don't know why, like for some reason the Smash, it's fine. I mean, Sakurai, you did a great job with the game and all this. I just don't understand why all the neutral stages they made are like, here's three platforms in this arrangement. And there's another stage with three platforms in this range. It's like, there are other ways to arrange your platforms. Why'd you keep doing this one over and over and over? I mean, it's cool. It's a good layout. I think that it produces, you know, a lot of good gameplay, but I think there are other platform arrangements that could have been really neat that we just didn't really get until, I guess Ultimate has more. I mean, Ultimate's got like four gazillion stages, and
Yeah, we get a little bit extra with the Stadium 2 platforms. That's about it. Or sometimes Fountain of Dreams, one of them goes away. But that's about all we get. Both. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's a cool idea. We've got that, what is it, like modified green greens or whatever. I've always thought that was a cool stage.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? That for a while, that was like, people were playing on that stage
a lot. Like everyone, that was like when we first started modding the game a lot and texture hacks were really big. And everyone's like, no way, Goku Falco. Best day ever.
yeah. I think that stage might be playable in the Akanea build. Like even if it might be in the rotation. But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of really cool ideas. And I think that if anyone's listening who's like a local TO or runs an online tournament, I think that's the place to do all this stuff, right? I think that people are willing to if Hungrybox ran some random fucking stage in Coinbox, probably nobody would like. It's so different if you do it in that kind of venue versus like now the stage is in Big House, you know, like I think online or whatever locals are the place to do it. So anyway, good question. Do appreciate you calling it. I know we talked about it a little bit last week on the Zamu program, and if people are interested in this kind of discussion, go check that episode out. But thanks for your call, Bajancho. And you got any shout outs for us?
Shout outs to New Jersey.
Hell yeah. Heck yeah. Tri-State.
Yeah. Shout outs to I think it's isn't Major Upset coming up, or is it?
I think it's in 2 weeks. Or no, Major Upset already happened. You think
Major Upset already happened? We got Battle of BC coming.
Oh shoot!
But there might be some major upsets happening in Battle of BC.
True.
Yeah.
Of course. That's probably what you meant.
To that, everyone tune in on that. That's going to be a great tournament. It looks like.
Yeah, so. I'll be there. I'll be casting. So
have fun.
Thanks so much for having me.
Take care.
Appreciate you.
All right, one more lined up here. Your name is a mouthful. I will attempt it anyway for fun. Crombopulos. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the program. How do we say your name if you care about that? And what's your question for us today, gamer?
Yo, what's up, PP and Tope, dude? I'm such a big fan of both of you guys.
Well, thank you.
Really big fan of the melee scene. It's Crombopulos, Mike. It's just a dumb thing from Rick and Morty.
Gotcha.
okay, so I kind of have like a really... I have like a weird question right now.
Mm.
So I got really into Valorant like 6 months ago-ish, and I've been grinding it really hard. And I've been like a really vivid dreamer my whole life. Like I can remember dreams way back to when I was like 5 years old and stuff.
Wow, that's
and
really cool.
it's kind of funny, but I recently have been having like tons of dreams, like really vivid dreams about Valorant where like I'm in the game and stuff. And so I was wondering if either of you guys throughout your career have had like a similar experience where you've had any interesting dreams about Melee that maybe like taught you something about the game or anything like that, maybe from like a philosophical stance. And the reason why I was asked this question is because I'm a huge metagame fan. I love that documentary. And one of the parts that really stuck out to me was when PP talked about his ideal Melee game. And so that's kind of like where that came from a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. I have a crazy take about this one.
Okay.
So I've had lots of Melee dreams, but most of my Melee dreams are like about, I even had a Melee dream, I think like this week. But they're usually about me being me, but like Melee is happening. Like I'm in a tournament or something.
Uh-huh.
Like I'm still me, but like I'm not in the game. I have had dreams where I'm in other like video games or like, what's a good example of this? Okay, TLDR, my take is that I think that it is way more likely you dream that you're in a video game if it's a 3D game, especially a first-person game like Valorant. Mm-hmm. I could not even imagine what dreaming like I'm in Melee is like, because when I experience Melee, I'm looking at the characters this way.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the sun's kind of on my face right now, so I look like I'm some kind of an angelic being. But
yeah, it's beautiful.
I have lots of dreams, and maybe it's also because of how I am. Like maybe when I got into Melee in 2008, so maybe I had dreams more about the game itself back then. But at this point, my relation to Melee is more like, it's like me and the community. Like I've been in the community for too long and I've been going to tournaments for too long. So when I have dreams about Melee now, it's more about me at a tournament. I literally have had, I'll tell you some of my crazy melee dreams. I had a dream once that I was in a tournament and I was playing against, I think it was, this was like years and years and years ago. It was someone from SoCal. I think it might have been Hugs. And I was playing Hugs in a tournament set and I win game one. And he goes, okay, I counterpick Mike Hayes. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? And Mike Hayes comes over and plugs in his controller. And they're now 2v1ing me on game two. Oh, and I was like, I didn't know you could do that. And it just, because it was a dream, it made sense. Yeah. I was like, damn, that's a really good counterpick. Like, oh yeah. Like I was going to counterpick a stage. Of course, I should have thought of counterpicking another player to 2v1 my opponent. That's just a really smart counterpick. And because it's it was a dream.
Rules.
Right, because it was a dream, I didn't question it. And then I like lost game two. I don't remember what happened after that. Like that was kind of the only part of the dream I remember. But I've had dreams like that. I've had a lot of dreams about like playing in a tournament, but like something's weird. Like I've had a dream where I like went to SoCal and played in a local, but I was a Mario Man for some reason. And I don't remember. And that's like all I remember about the dream is I was a fucking Mario Man and I was playing Blue Mario. Maybe this is when Scorp became a thing. I legitimately don't remember.
That's so funny.
I've had lots of dreams like that. I've had lots and lots of dreams like that. But I've never had dreams where I'm literally in the video game. I will say, whenever I start playing a new game really heavy or really deep, like I remember I was going through the whole, I remember I was going through the whole Katamari franchise where, you know, you roll the ball and you pick things up and you get the ball gets bigger and bigger. I remember I was playing that game again, because it's like a 3D game or whatever. I remember having dreams where I was doing that, like, and I was like basically in the world of Katamari and I was like rolling things up because I was like playing through all those games and I was playing them for like hours a day. And I've had dreams with like when I was getting really heavy in like rhythm game, like specific rhythm games. I remember when I started playing DDR, I'd have dreams where I'd see arrows. I remember when I was getting into chess at first. I will say it goes away the longer I've been playing a certain game. Cause like the more I feel like it, like your brain is like when you start playing a new game, it's like ingesting all this new information and it's building the neuron connections and stuff. And so your brain is like going in overtime to like build those connections. And you know how they say like your brain is really, really like it's really active and it's doing a lot of that stuff when you're sleeping, when you're learning a new activity or learning some kind of, you know, whatever it is. So I think that happens a lot more when you're new to a game. So for me, it's just been so long since I started Melee that I don't really have those dreams with the game itself anymore, but I still have them all the time when it comes to tournaments. Anyway, that was a bit of a long answer, but, Hopefully I answered your question.
I mean,
hopefully
I think
not that interesting.
I think that is much more than I expected when I first heard the question. Because for me, the only thing I can really tell you is I think I've had Melee dreams, but I don't really remember them very much.
It's hard to remember dreams.
I remember when I'm in bed, like about to sleep, I will have ideas about Melee. Or if I'm waking up sometimes, like I think maybe like I'll have like a little bit of a memory of a dream, or I'll just start thinking about something and it's fresh and I'll be like, oh, okay, well, maybe I try this today or I look at this today. Right. And so I have that. The only other thing I can tell you is I know that there were some people that told me that in 2012 in my sleep, I was muttering about Armada and Peach in my sleep somewhat often. So
see,
I know that I was having dreams that were about Melee. Well, whether I remember them or not is apparently a different story, but I know it was happening.
Those sound like nightmares.
it might be a matter of perspective. But no, I mean, I think when you do that stuff a lot, you do tend to, like, I mean, you know, when you're living and breathing Melee, right? Like, you're just more likely to have those experiences. So it is cool. And I think it's awesome. You remember your dreams, right? You're spending so much time sleeping. Might as well get some memories for the road. So I'm here for that. It just hasn't been something that's been the case for me so far. But maybe it changes. Maybe that's something that happens more, but I like it a lot either way. Is there something that prompted you to have this? We'll ask this and then we'll kind of send you on your way. But I'm curious, did you have some type of Melee dream that was transformative for you, Crumbopulous Mike?
Okay. Not a Melee dream. I'm probably the worst Melee player in this, in the Twitch stream right now. I'm horrible. I download Slippy. I think I'm like bronze 2 or something. I have immense love for the game though. Like you guys were just talking about fans.
That's what matters.
I'm an immense fan of the game. I love it so much. But no, for the Valorant side of things, yeah, definitely. Like I don't know how familiar you guys are with Valorant, but I really have a lot of trouble on the map Split. And I noticed like all of my dreams were taking place in the setting of that map.
Huh.
And I'm not going to say I really learned anything from it, because I'm still...
yeah.
I'm still, in your dream, were you still getting washed?
Yeah. My
no! Oh, still, my
yeah.
God.
Yeah, you know,
escape in your sleep. Awesome,
split lift rent free in your head. Where are you on? I mean, I played a good bit of Valorant, but more when at launch and during the beta. Are you where are you? Are you attacking? Are you holding like A or B or where are you in your dream? Yeah,
I'm on A site. On I'm defending on A site, and just like that long gap of like when I think I can peek that that door on CT, it just never goes well for me, man. But you know, I'm gonna keep trying, and I'll keep reading my Jungian dream analysis books and try to figure it out. But
maybe some aim labs too.
Yeah, maybe some aim labs. That would be more helpful, I think, than
Well, it's all angles. All angles will get you there. I'm here for all of it. But yeah, that's a fun question. And I don't know. I think it's cool to be able to have that. I mean, last point on this, it's weird he's coming up again for me, but I remember some people talked about how Armada was trying to learn, maybe he did learn a lucid dream so he could explore melee ideas or practice in his sleep or things like that. So, I mean, there is that realm, that interesting place. I mean, if you're going to spend that much time sleeping again, maybe there's a lot of really cool stuff that happens there. So I think it's an interesting thing to talk about, regardless of how interested in competition you are, but it's a cool thing. So thanks for picking it up.
Yeah, totally. I'm really happy to be able to talk to you guys today. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
See ya.
Well, that was Crumbopulous Mike 69, and that was a great question. We had one or two other really cool questions. I hope that y'all, who we didn't have time for today, I hope you come back, because I actually would really love to talk about both of them on a future date. And that's always the thing about Radio Melee, is if you're, for those of you who watch this on YouTube, if there's something you're just dying to ask us, we will talk about anything and everything. Just come by the stream on a Tuesday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. The only thing left is for us to give our community voice question to all of you out there in the YouTube audience. And PB, if you don't have anything immediately queued up, I actually have a very simple question that I thought of that I want to hear from the people about.
Oh, if you've got something pressing, please, let's hear it, Toph.
It's not that pressing. Do you have one too?
I mean, there's the low hanging fruit of, well, who do you think's going to win Battle of BC?
Okay,
or is it
maybe
an upset or whatever? Right.
So mine's kind of related to that. Mine is actually a little bit more long term. I want you guys to do your predict, because we gave some Battle of BC predictions this episode. I want you guys to give your predictions as to how the rest of the year is going to go, especially as we're ramping back up into tournament season. Mm-hmm. In particular, who do you think will be first on the rankings at the end of the year? It's that simple. I want you guys to basically predict how the rest of the year is going to go, if anyone's got any hot takes, and who do you think is going to come out on top on the 2023 rankings? Like, who's going to establish themselves as the best player at the end of the year? So, obviously, this is completely... I mean, there are, like...
So many things that could happen.
At least 6 or 7 correct answers. So, I just want to hear from you guys. I want to hear your hot takes. And I want to see who people are kind of rooting for and who people think are on the up and up right now. So,
It might be interesting to look at this community voice maybe end of the year or something like
that. See how it aged. Yeah, see if it aged well or not. What do you think about that? I feel like that's a more long-term version of who's going to win Battle of BC.
Yeah, we could do a long-term, and then we could do a shorter term if you wanted. I don't know how you feel about that. Give them two or just
fine.
That one.
Who's going to win? Who's going to be number one at the rankings at the end of the year, and how is their Battle of BC placement going to affect them? How's that?
How will this affect Zane's legacy?
Exactly. Just like LeBron.
Exactly. No, that's wonderful. I think that's fun. And is there... Did you bring this up because you have a hot take for the year for Battle BC, or are you just curious about the people's thoughts?
I think that this is right about, as I'm planning my own travel for the summer, it is occurring to me that tournament season is basically going to start up again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this is about when it's going to start being relevant. Because, it didn't make any sense to talk about it a month or two ago because there weren't that many big events.
Right.
But now I think there are going to be a bunch, especially as we head into summer. So,
yeah, for sure. So I think that's great. I think people, if there's one thing I know people love talking about, it's ranks and predictions for placements. So I think this is right in line with with community topics. So if you are one of the people that answered before, if you are a fan, if you're curious about what's going to happen, or you want to start some discussion, please do in the comments. You know, where I read through the comments of the videos all the time, and I, you know, you'll see me responding in there. If not, I'm silently liking and lurking and seeing what you guys are up to. So someone's check it out. And if you got any recommendations for guests or anything else you want Radio Melee or anything else GG to do, leave a comment. Again, I'm lurking. But that being said, I think we're going to wrap up here. Thank you so much, Toe, for holding it down and working everything out at the last minute. We had a crazy pregame shenanigans, but you held it down, and you always hold it down in the episodes. So thank you so much, man. It's been another great episode. Thank you, everyone, so much for calling in, everyone that watches, listens, and maybe shares it with other people. But for now, we'll see you next week. This is Radio Melee, signing out.